Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, July 31st. I'm Ray Graff. Time for another edition of the Writers Forum. Joining us today to answer your questions about the creative writing process are Barbara Chepitis and Lolly Davidson. Today they want to touch upon alternate forms of writing, as in storytelling, audiobooks, YouTube, semaphore, Morse code, I don't know. How do we tell our stories in the digital age? We'll talk about that, and they'll take your calls and questions at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You may also email your writing questions to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Barbara and Lolly and your creative writing calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Say, it's the Writers Forum today, and we're joined by Barbara Chepitis, author of many published novels, including The Amber and A Teacher of Writing and Public Speaking. Also, Lolly Davidson, a professor of writing at SUNY Adirondack. Her short story collection, Strange Appetites, won the Adirondack Center for Writing People's Choice Award. She's written three novels, one of which won the National Indie Excellence Award. Let's talk writing today. Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org as we move along with the program here. But the number, once again, is 800-348-2551. Barbara Chepitis, how you doing?
I'm doing okay.
I think it's pretty cool that you both rewrote your bios while we were listening to the news.
We're storytellers.
That's what happens when writers come in. So what's going on, Barbara?
Not too much. I'm spending a lot of time tending to weird wild animals in my yard.
What? Like what?
Yeah, I know. Well, we had a fisher. We had a baby bird that followed me around the yard.
What kind of bird?
I'm pretty sure it was a quail.
What?
Yeah. I've never seen a bird like this before, but baby birds tend to do that to me. I'm not sure why.
So the birds just follow you around?
They do.
I've been digging the cat birds. The cat birds
have been
in our backyard a lot this summer, and I love them. They're very gregarious, and they're
I love their call.
Yeah, there's the cat sound, and then there's another one. There's the meow. And the other one I can't really imitate too
well. You may have we have mockingbirds.
Yeah.
And I once had one that was, I went out into my yard. I had a specific call that I used to call my cats in, and it went like that.
Yeah.
And I went out into my yard,
whistling.
And I heard that call.
Ah.
I'm like, what's going on here?
Cool.
It was a mockingbird.
Well, you know, catbirds are in that family, but I guess they're not as talented as the mockingbirds.
Right.
Well, Lolly Davidson, have you been looking at any birds?
Yeah, we got a bunch of birds. I got a bunch of starlings that come. They come and they party in my bird bath.
They get
15, and they're just kind of hopping around and making a mess. And they just they splash and then they fly away and they leave. Almost no water, but the water's all blue with poop.
Wow.
So then I refill it, and then they come back and they do the whole thing again.
Well, how descriptive. Are you up to anything else?
Yeah, I'm actually recording my novel. So Blue Woman Burning was my first novel. It's sort of semi-autobiographical about a woman whose mother spontaneously combusts in the Altiplano.
Oh, that old trope.
Yeah. So I'm recording it, actually. My husband's doing the recording. I'm doing the reading.
Yeah.
And in our little studio. And we just made a little blanket booth. And, it's fun. It's fun. It's kind of what I'm in the mood for. It's like there's a creative element to it, but it's not as hard as writing.
You've written everything.
Because I've written it.
Right. Now, once you have it recorded and edited and everything is nice, what do you do with it?
Well, my publisher will take it. She'll give it to her guy who masters it, and I'm not sure what that involves, but they do something to the
EQ
WAV files.
And the compression, and they make everything
they
sound.
They make little spells.
And then there's various platforms they farm it out to.
They do.
To Audible. And then you have to, Audible has standards, so they... it's not a guarantee that they'll accept it, but they accepted my book of short stories, so I expect they'll accept
it. That's exciting. How long does it take to do something like that?
I think it takes me about an hour per chapter. It takes me about an hour to prep, and then it probably takes us an hour and a half to record it. And then my husband does another hour or so of listening to it and getting the blips and
the false starts and everything else.
I mean, well, yeah. I mean,
are you a good reader?
I'm pretty good. I mean, of course, I'm a critic. So yes, people tell me I'm a good reader. I'm expressive. I make a lot of verbal mistakes, so there's a lot of stopping and starting. And what we learned in this process was it's better, like, you read this, you know, you read as far as you can until you make a mistake, and then you stop right away, back up to the last sentence, and,
really?
And record over. So you don't read all the way through and then go back and try to punch in corrections. That's much
write this
more
down.
Time-consuming.
I've been in radio 40 years. I've never heard that advice. It sounds smart.
Yeah.
Barbara, why don't you do some books on...
I've been looking into that and looking into maybe doing a podcast. I really want to do a storyteller's podcast.
Oh, that'd be great.
Because I have a lot of connections with the storytelling community, and I would like something for grown-ups.
You know what sells? Paranormal. And then you're all over that. Why don't you do that? Ghost stories and things like that.
Just
you know,
ghost stories?
All kinds of weird stuff, you know? Walked outside, the pigeon talked to me, followed me around.
Right, the bird's following me, the thing is happening.
Yeah.
That's an excellent idea, because my publisher, Red Penguin, so Stephanie Larkin, she actually just published a book called Bookology. But she comes from a marketing background, and that was the advice, is don't just do a podcast, define a very specific audience, that you actually, weirdly enough, get more people with a more narrowly defined audience than if you do something very
broad.
This
is so true, and this is true on this program, too. Yeah. If I go in with a topic that is general, it's crickets most of the time.
Right,
but if it's specific... And how specific are we today?
Yeah.
So we're not dealing with crickets for the whole hour.
And you definitely are always dealing and living in the realm of the supernatural.
Well, I feel
can't
bad
help
about
it.
That.
But
why do you feel bad about that?
I can't help it.
I mean, that's cool, right?
I think so. I enjoy it. You know, I don't mind the weird things that happen.
I love the stuff that's a little off the beaten path. Like next Wednesday... Another UFO show with Professor Kevin Knuth from SUNY Albany, who is
must listen to that.
Does scientific research on this stuff. Last time we did it, people called in with some really hair-raising sightings that sounded like they believed they happened. I don't know if they happened, but you know.
Well, I've always said that I feel really blessed because of all the weird experiences in my life. I don't have to look for stuff to write.
Yeah.
It just happens to me.
I'm like a wannabe supernatural person. Like ghosts do not come to me, but I would love it if they did.
So you have the soul of an accountant.
Exactly.
That's okay.
Exactly.
It's all right.
I'm a skeptic,
It's Writing Today with Barbara Chepitis and Lolly Davidson. Creative writing and your questions. As we roll along, we're going to get into a topic here. And whatever you want. 800-348-2551. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. Now, Barbara, when we were talking about this topic, number one, you both were very sassy, but it's fine. It's fine. Everything's fine now. You'll get your comeuppance because we're on the air.
We do sassy well.
Yes, you do. But you had an idea about talking about alternate forms of writing.
Yeah,
explain.
I'm really interested in the way people make and tell their stories now. You know, I grew up in a family of storytellers, so it was always around the table the stories would get told. Sometimes the same ones over and over again, but these were a huge influence on everything I wrote and remain so. I don't know how people are telling their stories about who they are, where they come from, what they value.
So you're talking about digital forms and things like this?
I think, yes, any form. You know, what is the form now? Is it still around the table? Is it now on Facebook?
TikTok?
Yeah, what is our storytelling form now? And how does it work for you?
I mean, ultimately, it'll always be verbal, right?
I would think so, but... I know, like, I look at the next generation, our nieces and nephews and grandchildren, they tell stories around the table. You know, it's still true. But that's a family tradition with me.
Now, when you write, when you write on paper or however you do it now into the computer, is it still your voice? In other words, is it the voice that you use when you're sitting around the table with the family talking, or is it artificial in a way?
I think it depends. When I'm writing a novel, the voices in the novel are the voices of my characters. And some of those grow out of people I knew, my experiences, you know, but they're their own voices. They're the character voice. When I'm doing nonfiction, it's the table voices, definitely.
How about you, Lolly?
What's the question of...
When you write, are you consciously differentiating your voice from the one that you use when you're shooting the breeze with your friends or telling a story to family?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think it's different every time. I would say, I mean, I definitely have to, whatever voice I'm using, I have to inhabit it. And so I'm always drawing off a lot of life. But, you know, there's times when I'm trying to extend myself into a life that I haven't lived. So I guess I can't say.
Okay.
It's different.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah. You know, like I said, when I'm writing fiction, it's very different. And part of my struggle in forming the nonfiction I'm working on now has been, oh, my God, it's my voice. It's not my characters.
Yeah.
It's me.
But that's not what you want. You want your character.
And
I just find the role playing has got to be difficult. You have to stay in character, just like if you're acting.
For nonfiction?
If you're writing in fiction.
Oh, no. That's easy.
Really?
That's easy. Playing pretend. Like when you were a kid, didn't you, you know, you had the little dolls and you had them. Sometimes it wasn't necessarily dolls. Sometimes it was cars and the cars were talking.
Oh,
it's like that.
I didn't play pretend.
Oh, okay.
I sat in the corner and brooded most of the time. No. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. We have only just begun. It's creative writing. Lolly Davidson, Barbara Chepitis are here. You can be here too if you wish. If not, we'll continue to chat. It's 800-348-2551. Ray Graff with you. It's the Writers Forum. Some smart people in the studio today making me feel even more ignorant than usual. Lolly Davidson is here. Barbara Chepitis is here. Tell you what, let's grab a call, and then we'll go back to what we were chatting about. Bob's in Dalton. Bob, go ahead.
Yes, I have a home recording studio.
Ooh, nice.
And lately I've been recording narrators of their own books. And I want to be sure that I do the correct steps next. Do I need to get an ISDN number or anything like that before I submit?
Do not know the answer to that question.
I think it depends partly on if there's already an ISBN number for the book itself, you know. And I'm not sure how that transfers to the audio version. I know that most writers have their contract includes whether they retain things like film rights, audiobook rights, that kind of thing. So you want to talk to your writers and see what they have. And if your writers have agents or lawyers who know this stuff, like Paul Rapp is my lawyer. I will admit that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you pay him in bourbon?
Oh, my God. He's seen me through. Every time I call him, he's like, what weird thing do you have today?
He's a great fellow.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
So whether they have a lawyer, an entertainment lawyer or not, and find out what their contract is regarding that.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot. Is there money to be made in this audiobook thing?
Couldn't tell you. I mean, I guess it depends on how popular your book is.
Yeah.
But I do. I mean, my impression is that fewer and fewer people are reading, like with their eyeballs on a piece of paper, and more people are listening.
That's not reading, then.
Well, you know, there's a debate about that. I always feel compelled to say I listened to a book rather than I read a book when I got it. But most of my reading I do by audio listening because for two reasons. I can't sit still very well. I really don't like sitting still. And so if you're listening to a book, you can do any number of things, walk and clean and whatever. So I get a lot more.
Well, how do you write then?
How do I write?
If you can't keep still, how do you write?
Yeah, well, it's hard. It's hard. There's a lot of standing up and walking around and pacing back and forth and going for a walk and coming back and sitting down. So, yeah, it's a very active process.
You know, Joe Donahue, who is a real book nut, he loves to read, and he has a long commute. And so oftentimes I'll say, Joe, how many books do you read this month? Oh, 17. And I say, well, how do you do that? He said, well, I do listen to some on my long commute in every day. To me, listen, it's not reading. You know, when the Jack Benny Show was on the radio, he didn't say, I'm reading the Jack Benny Show. I'm listening to the Jack Benny Show.
Well, I think one of the differences is when you're, and I don't have anything against listening.
No, it's fine. Yeah, you're consuming it in some way.
It's different because when you're reading, you're inventing the voices of the characters, of the tone and mood through the sound.
Yeah.
To me, writing is a very inherently sound-oriented medium.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting. You know, when I first started reading all the Ian Fleming Bond books, it was after my mom took my brother and me to see Live and Let Die at the theater. So it was 73.
Right.
Roger Moore, kind of foppish, whatever, you know. But then you read the book, and the voice is so different. It's so gritty and so much different that it was way more enjoyable to read the book than watch the adaptation.
Yeah, and I had a lot of discussions with my students, both the writing and the performance groups. When you read, what do you hear? You know, what's it like as a heard experience when your eye is on the page? And those who were read to by their parents at night, it was a much more lively experience to read themselves.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting.
I know.
But how do you prove that?
I would have to get a grant.
All right.
I do think there are a lot of studies that show that if you read to your kids, they will be better readers.
Yeah, there are. I was specifically interested in the voice experience.
Yeah.
You know, the heard experience of reading. Because to me, it is a heard experience.
Yeah, I was going to say two things. One is that for me, and I think I have a little ADHD. It's not crippling, but it's there. And that's like, hence, I can't sit still.
Right.
But so for me, reading with my eyeballs is much harder because there's a level of concentration that actually distracts me from absorbing the material. Whereas when I'm listening, I absorb much better because I'm not having to do that work with my eyes or because I can move, I can process the information. But it depends on who's doing the reading. And I've had a lot of books ruined for me by a voice that I found irritating or, you know. So, you know, it really depends. And as I'm doing this reading of my own book, there's a balance. Like, you want to be expressive. I mean, I think this is true of any performance, right? There's such a thing as being too expressive, where you're being so expressive that all anybody can think is, wow, she's so expressive.
Ah.
And they're not hearing the words.
Yeah.
So it's like, as a performer, you want to be, you know, as a reader, you want to be expressive, but kind of a little bit step back, you know, so that the words come through. You're a little bit more neutral.
Yeah.
I wonder if while you're reading your own work out loud, do edits come to mind that you say, I should have changed this. I should have done. You know what? This doesn't flow when you speak it.
Oh, my God. That's what's really painful about it. And in fact, some passages you can tell, the ones that I really honed, I make no mistakes. You know, when I'm reading it, they just really roll off my lips because I wrote it, read it out loud, wrote it, rewrote it, read it out loud. And I did that so many times that I had it beautiful.
Yeah.
And then you can see the places where I didn't do that. And you don't notice them on the page until you go to read it. And then all of a sudden you're kind of stumbling over your words because
there's
the
a
bad
thing
choice
in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, in radio, and I was a commercial copywriter way back in the late 80s. I was a couple of years I wrote commercials. And anything we write here, you're writing it for the ear and not for the eye.
Right.
If you start a project and you say, gosh, down the road, I'm going to make an audiobook out of this. Does it change the way you write?
It doesn't with me, because I'm always, you know, I was raised in a house of musicians. So we had like singing, piano, violin, music every day.
Yeah.
So I was attuned to sound very early on. And I remember being like, I don't know, maybe 8, 9 years old, sitting at the piano playing and thinking, I want to do with words what music does with sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a very clear thought in my mind. You know, it's like a little crazy girl. I should have.
That's so interesting, though.
It is interesting.
Out riding my bike.
Because I also have a musical background, and I was thinking about that as I was working on this recording, that how important that musical background is, because especially, like, let's say we're punching in, like I've made a mistake and we're going back and I have to re-say the line, but I've got to say it at the same, like we only have so much space.
Right.
So it's got to be the same timing. And
right.
And I think that might be hard for some people, but it's not really hard for me because of that musical ear.
Yeah.
It's like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, just play it for me and I can imitate
You're
it,
thinking
no problem.
Of pacing, rhythm.
Yeah, cadence.
All of that. It's all,
you know,
in there.
The
yeah.
pitch variation, it's all musical.
Yeah.
That is
yeah.
fascinating. It's the Writers Forum today with Lolly Davidson, Barbara Chepitis, and you, if you would like to join in, 800-348-2551. I love this business about musical writing.
Yeah,
did a history show, I think last week or the week before, with Kathy Sheehan, who is the head of the Hart Clewitt Museum and Troy and Rensselaer County historian. And somebody called in with a question about this writer, Charles Fort, who is buried at Albany Rural, and he wrote weird stuff. He collected weird, you'd probably like him, Barbara. He collected data about fish falls and weird things that happened. This is from the 20s and 30s. And I made the comment, I've read his books, and they're very tough to read. His I guess it's, he's a period, he is a product of his time. Mm-hmm. And so the writing is just very, it's awful in my book. It's very tough to read and understand. To me, that's not musical. Who
right.
is a really musical writer?
Oh, boy.
All the poets.
A lot Rainer of the
Maria
poets.
Rilke.
Not all of them, but a lot of them.
I think Rilke's really musical.
Rilke's very musical. To Kill a Mockingbird.
Interesting.
I'm going to go back to that's one of my earliest influences. I have a list of, like, my 10 books that I wish I'd written. And that's on the list. So is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Which I've read, yeah.
I think Louise Erdrich is really really musical.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some writers who put together the sounds as well as the visuals.
I mean, was that what Kerouac and that ilk were trying to do?
I think so.
They were trying to get that natural voice, the unedited
yeah.
natural voice, like where it's more inspired and improvisational, I think.
Yeah, they had more of there are differences, right? The beat poets had like a jazz voice.
Yeah.
Right.
I never liked that. I thought he was not highly overrated. I don't know about you guys.
I think I'm like this about the beat poets.
Yeah.
You know, Howl is great. Howl is fun to read out loud, you know, and that's partly what I go by, because we're both performers, too.
Yeah.
We're both storytellers.
You know who else is fun to read out loud is Roald Dahl, like all
really?
His children's books.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that he's got a bad rap for being anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
But James and the Giant Peach, the witches.
Yeah, yeah.
Very fun to read aloud.
And who
the
else
giants.
Is fun to read it? Dr. Seuss.
Oh, my
okay.
God. Talk about musical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's always going to be musical if it sort of has a rhyming
yeah.
cadence,
right?
Right?
Yeah. 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 But in terms of prose, yeah, I'm going back to Hitchhiker's Guide, you know.
Fun book.
What's so wrong with being drunk? Ask a glass of water.
Yeah, there's a nice, yeah, very nice cadence to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Toni Morrison. She's
Toni
very
Morrison.
Musical.
Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Writers Forum. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Glenn writes in from Woodstock. We all learn differently. Some are auditory learners. Mm-hmm. Some are visual learners. Some are tactile learners. Mm-hmm. Some of us may get more out of an audiobook, while others may get more from holding and reading a book. Well, I think that's true.
I think it is.
I've definitely found that with my friends who are good at reading with their eyeballs, as I say. They cannot listen. Like when they try to listen to a book, they space out and they lose track of what's being said.
Yeah.
And then, you know, those of us who really prefer to get it in the audio version have a little harder time.
I think it's true. I found it in my students, certainly, that some are better at absorbing stuff by listening, and others are better visually or in a tactile way or even a kinetic way.
What do you mean a kinetic way? Explain.
Well, when I started my poetry, my performance classes, I would start them with a song called Happy by Farrell. What's his name?
I remember Happy. That song.
But it was a specific video with dogs and a cat dancing on the beach.
So you played dog videos in the class.
Fair enough. And to start the class, I would make them dance like dogs, now like a cat.
It's pretty amazing she could make her students dance like dogs.
Oh, and they did. Yeah. And they did. And they all, at the end of the class, they would say, I'm so glad you did that.
Wow.
Because I'm a really physical person, and I needed that form of expression to get into this very scary public speaking and performance is a scary class for students. They're like deer in the headlights when they come in.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
It's just, it's such a stumbling block for so many people. And that's one thing I cannot understand.
Right. So I just started them dancing, and that worked.
How do you get them to dance, though? I could see
I just put the video up, and I'd go, okay, now I'll be dogs. Now I'll be cats. You know, and then they would do it because they're students. I don't know. But it was fun. It's such a fun song. So,
I mean, I love reading because, to me, there's a visual element.
Mm-hmm.
And to be immersed in a world where every... And again, it can be a sketch. If the writer is good, there doesn't have to be endless description to paint enough of a picture where my mind fills in the rest. And to write visually is very interesting.
That's what I was saying. You know, our mind fills in the rest when we're reading. I hope it's not an art that we lose, because I think it's very good for us to...
Why would we lose it?
I don't know.
Because everything's audio, because of AI. I mean, we're just all dumbing down. But
let's
not go there.
I mean,
I do think, like, there are times when I'm listening to a book where I think, I really need to see this on the page. Like, I need to see how it's laid out. And there's something that your eye does when you're reading on the page where it's recursive, where you read forward and then you jump back and you read forward and jump back. Or, you know, you're reading, you're like, what happened? And you can flip back at like three pages to find out what, you know, like, oh, yeah, it was that character.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that as easily on a tape, you know. So, there are times when you really have to see it and see how it's laid out. And sometimes where the reader's kind of ruining it for me, and I think, you know, I think I need to read this so that I can hear how my head voice would express this, and because it would be a completely different experience that way.
Yeah. And the thing is, the text stays still.
Yeah.
And that means we can run around inside it.
Oh, I love that. I like that. Barbara Chepitis is here. Lolly Davidson is here. It's the Writers Forum. 800-348-2551 is our number. VoxPop@WAMC.org is our email address. Let's go to Patrick in Saratoga. Patrick, you're on.
Hi there.
Hello.
I just caught your show. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah,
hi,
go ahead.
Yep. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm pulled off on the side of the road. And
That's good.
So anyways, just listen to the show for the first time. Just yesterday, I got off the airplane, came back from a really cool vacation in the Black Hills of South Dakota.
Oh.
Okay, it was fun. And so there's two things about your wonderful conversation. The first one is started about how, you know, storytelling and this and that. And we rented little cabins, and we're coming from Saratoga, New York. I've never been to this area. But we somehow, like impromptu, there was a dinner. You know, a dinner was made by a woman from Israel. Okay. The next cabin, the middle cabin, was a young couple. They were moving. He was a 30, He was a B-52 pilot.
Wow.
And then myself and my beautiful. So we had, and she wanted to cook up the food. And we sat and we talked. So it was such a random stuff and the stories. And, you know, so there was storytelling there. But that's not why I'm calling.
Okay.
But it has to do. So on the plane coming home, unfortunately, we're coming back home. Charlotte, North Carolina. And to the right of me was a one of the most kick-ass grandmothers known to man.
Nice. Well, with three,
she was really, without a doubt. And three beautiful grandchildren, the ages. There were two twins, but we're talking like 12, maybe like 9, and just like perfect age children.
Okay.
And so I asked her, it's nighttime, and I asked her, I said, you know, and she lives in our local town. She flew to Minnesota bringing her kids over. So I came up and I was laughing, and my wife was elbowing me in my table, in my side, you know, like, shut up. Why are you laughing? You're
right.
Being a weirdo.
Okay.
Okay. Ready for it? This is about the creative writing.
Okay.
So I did tell the lady, I said, so you're bringing all your grandchildren to town. Is it like a work? Are you tricking them all as a work camp? Like, you're bringing, you know, because they've never been to grandma's house.
Okay.
And they're at worker age. I said, are you going to have them wash the windows? And I noticed she had all kinds of books in her bag. So she giggles about this. And so the entire flight, I kept on telling her, basically I was writing a story, and the name of the thing was like grandma's work camp.
Okay.
And I think she wanted to know more, so I was telling her, I was fantasizing and writing a creative story about grandma's work camp.
Well,
anyways,
that sounds like fun.
God bless. And by the way, Paul Rapp is our copyright lawyer, so that guy called.
Oh, there you go. Beautiful.
He rules.
Small world after all.
Yeah, but
I find that
creative writing, yeah.
I find that stories from people that you meet in travels are really interesting and useful, because people will say something on a train or on a plane that they won't say to a stranger. They'll say it to a stranger, but they won't say it to anyone
else.
That's
so interesting.
So that's one of my favorite places to collect stories. So good for you.
Patrick, I hate to say it, but we are overdue for a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Vox Pop with Barbara Tsipitis and Lally Davidson, the Writers Forum. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC Writers Forum today with Barbara Tsipitis and Lally Davidson. 800-348-2551. We sort of morphed into a discussion that focused for the most part on audiobooks, and I like where we're going with this. Do most authors do their own books, or I've never heard an audiobook. I never want to hear an audiobook. Except yours, Lally, obviously.
The ones that I've had done have been done by other people.
I think there's a big business in having it done by other people. It's just that it's really expensive to hire somebody. It's like $9,000 or something.
I would have done yours for
$3,000.
I would have done it for
$2,000. Yeah.
Bidding war.
I think on the other hand, especially with famous authors, sometimes people really like to hear the actual author. So I know Louise Erdrich reads all her own books, and she does a great job.
Yeah.
So I guess it depends on if you have the skill to do it.
And the place to do it, because you need, you've got a sound studio.
Yeah, we've got our own little spot. But for the most part, I mean, you know, the professional voice actors, I mean, they're really good. I'm listening, you know, they do all the different voices.
And oh, really? So they change it up?
They can change it up. Yeah, quite amazingly. And as I'm listening to them, I'm like, oh, how did you do that? That's, you know. So I like those the best when the author knows how to change, when the reader knows how to change their voices. I don't like sometimes they're produced with multiple actors, and for the most part I find that to be awkward, with exception of The Golden Compass. They had a cast of actors for The Golden Compass, the Philip, forgetting the author's name, His Dark Materials, Philip Pullman.
Okay.
And that was amazing. That was like listening to a play.
Yeah. Are there any works, Barbara, that you have done that would not lend themselves to reading out loud?
That's interesting. I don't think so. I think I am so conscious of sound when I write that any one of them could be, you know, be different sounds. But I think any one of them would become kind of...
It would work.
Yeah, an almost musical experience.
You know, we were in the break, and Lolly, you were talking about your very early experience with sort of audiobooks when you were a baby.
Yeah, my mother was an English professor, and I was the fourth of five children, and she didn't have a lot of time, so she was very concerned with, you know, making us sure that we would all be brilliant. So she created these audio tapes to teach me how to speak, and I was sort of her experiment.
Nice.
So she would read very slowly, "Hey, diddle, diddle, the cat and the fiddle," and they were kind of repetitive. And then she just put that little tape recorder into my cradle and let that be my babysitter. And she credits that with why I spoke at the age of 11 months, apparently in full sentences. I don't really believe that. But that's what she says, that my first words were, "This is Al Sayers." Because there was a radio announcer who came on and said, "This is Al Sayers." And I was like,
funny.
"This is Al Sayers."
Cool.
That I believe, because you could see that the cadence of that would have been interesting to a child.
Yeah, yeah.
But she said, I always spoke in complete sentences rather.
Wow.
So if you said, "You want this one or that one?" I'd say, "I want that one," instead of, you know, just this one.
In your youth, Barbara, do you recall when you were young being read to?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We were read to, or... when my mother was too tired to read, she would make up stories about these two mouses. And
mice.
One was mice. Okay, right. Yeah, you're right. I was very young, so I'm going back.
They were probably two mouses. Yeah,
they were two mouses. Me and my sister, I'm less than a year apart with my older sister. And she would, one was me and one was my sister, and she would make up adventure stories.
Oh, cool.
For us, around those mouses.
And so...
Mousies? I don't know.
You know, I did the same thing with my kids. I think I only read, I mean, some of the early books, Sea Spot Run and yada, yada, yada. But I read Narnia.
Oh,
That stuff. But I mainly made stuff up. And I think that's why my kids are a little bent.
Yeah.
Because my stories were insane.
I too, blame my mother. Okay, they can blame you, and that's a good thing.
Fair enough. All right, Jeremy writes in, "Have you read What We See When We Read?"
I have not. That sounds like an interesting book, though.
Okay, yes, I've not heard of that
one. When We Read.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Writers Forum today, Lolly Davidson at Barbara Chepitis and Elizabeth in New Paltz. Elizabeth, you're on.
Hi.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I have your own speakerphone.
Okay.
You talked about the difference between reading, whether you're reading with your eyes or listening, and, you know, it's more complicated than that. Some people feel more comfortable reading by listening because their vision isn't as good as it used to be, or they're reading a story on an iPhone or an iPad. And when you select text, you can choose the reader. You know, you could set the setting as to if you find one person reading or another person reading. But anyhow, I just wanted to address the fact that some people even read with Braille as opposed to reading with their eyes.
Yep.
And do you feel that there's a different experience in terms of experiencing it just because you're getting it through a different input?
That's a complicated question.
That's a very complicated question.
I think everybody's so different.
Yeah.
That...
I would say it's different. I don't think it's necessary that one is better than the other.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, or more effective. I think it really...
Earlier in the program, you said something about when you're reading with your eyeballs, it's a different experience than when you're listening to an audiobook.
Well, it is.
I think it is. I don't think it's better or worse. I think it depends on ever so many factors. You know, as an educator, I was learned the idea of multiple
intelligences.
And I think that we all have multiple intelligences and that we use the one that works best.
And as I think another caller mentioned, some people are more, everybody has a different sense that's dominant as well.
Mm-hmm.
So for most people, the vision is dominant. But for some people, hearing is dominant.
Right.
And, you know, so it really just depends on the particular body that you got. And like for me, I think audio is dominant because of that early experience.
Interesting.
She trained me to listen.
Diddle.
And so then that became my preferred mode of absorbing things.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, thanks for the call. Of course, kids today, you know, these kids today with their TikToks and their videos and everything else. That's very visual.
Very visual.
Are we losing... Is that part of our brain that creates, that fills the scene, that makes you visualize something that you read? Are we losing that to some extent?
I hope not.
I mean, I think you gain some and you lose some. Like there's always been this perception, at least I was raised with this idea that TV was bad. Reading was good, TV was bad. Now, TV was bad. TV has gotten a lot better. And,
what do you mean? Captain Kangaroo, come on.
You know.
Ernie Kovacs,
Star
come
Trek.
On.
I mean, the acting was terrible.
Bonanza.
The writing was terrible. But now I think the writing, you know, a lot of these series are, you know, the writing is excellent, the acting is excellent, the filming is excellent. So for me, I do watch avidly, and I always feel a little guilty about it because I feel like I should be more of a reader. But I think, so you're just doing different things. You win some, you lose some. If you are getting most of your stories visually, the part of your brain that visualizes probably is atrophying because you're having everything visualized for you.
Yeah.
On the other hand, because you're having everything visualized for you, that frees up another part of your brain to think and interact. So I'm doing an awful lot of thinking and interacting mentally as I'm watching. And so you win some, you lose some.
Yeah.
I mean, my father was a TV guy. He was an educational TV back in the old days.
And, oh, wow.
So he was all in on TV. We had TVs all over the place. And I didn't read that many books. I mean, I read them in school when I had to. But when I read today, I can still fill in those blanks. If I read, you know, Amber, mm-hmm. I will fill in those blanks.
Right.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It's not blanks. It's just an outline. You know what I mean?
I do.
And that's sort of why audiobooks kind of scare me. Because of the sound. Like, it might sound exactly right for you, Lolly, because you wrote it and it was in your head. But to me, it might sound something completely different.
I know. Yeah. Right. Yeah, you do lose that.
I still go back to, I mean, one of the reasons, besides the music in my family, we were a bunch of people who told stories around the table.
Yeah.
You know, so I always had that sense of humans are made to tell their stories.
And definitely some people are better storytellers than others.
Yes,
like,
my family was really good.
Yeah, my southern cousins are very good storytellers. And I remember, you know, I used to wait tables between college and graduate school, and we had this Irish bartender who was an incredible storyteller. And I started to listen to him because I was like, what is he doing that is so good?
Right.
And he always started with a hook. Mm-hmm. You know, it was always like, oh, you want to hear about, you know, broken feet.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, okay.
I do.
And then he'd start somewhere else. And you go, how are we going to get to broken feet from here? And so you're listening, you know. So he always had a hook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just was so there are a lot of cultures that they teach that to each other. I do wonder if we're losing that.
That's what I said. The next generation in my family are just as really talented family storytellers as my parents were and my grandparents. Mm-hmm. So apparently we're not. Once you've got it, once you've learned it, you just keep going with it.
And I hope enough people learn it. It seems to me that many of us, and all of us really, these devices, these phones, have sequestered us into our own little worlds at times.
Yeah.
And is there a place left where we can get together and, in person and tell stories?
And tell our stories.
I mean, I was arranging for the retirement party for two of my colleagues last spring, and I was kind of shocked because we went out to dinner, and I said, could everybody tell a story about these two people? And they're all English teachers, and they all got scared, and they were I don't have any stories, and then they would tell a story.
Right.
I was like, what did you think I was asking for? That was a story. But there was a kind of intimidation of if
that's
you're not used to
the
that.
The deer in the headlight thing students went through. Yeah. And in my classes that I had to get them out of, you could have made them dance like dogs.
I don't think I could have done that.
That would have been a hell of a party.
Sure.
Absolutely.
My students would never do that for me. I don't think my colleagues would either.
So here's a technical question for you, Lolly. Which book are you reading?
Blue Woman Burning. It was my first novel.
Okay, and you're doing the audiobook of that.
Yeah.
Based on the number of chapters you have done, how long will it take to listen to? When you read a book, you put it down. Okay, I didn't get a chance to read today. I'm going to read tomorrow. And it could go over days, weeks, months even.
The text stays still.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
My
so how long will it take to hear your book?
I don't know. My husband would be able to answer that question, but I'm thinking it's 8 to 10 hours probably listening experience.
That's probably about the same for reading with a novel.
It's 260 pages, so what most people read. Yeah, most people read between 20 to 30 pages an hour. So,
I may have imagined this, and maybe it was a hallucination, but I think that some people listen to audiobooks at two-thirds, not two-thirds speed, but
sped up. Yes, particularly people with ADHD.
Like Evelyn Wood, speed
people
reading.
People with ADHD, because they speed things up because people with ADHD like new stuff. And if you speed up the audio, there's less time for their brains to wander. So they actually focus better if they speed it up.
Yeah. I always felt fortunate because I lean toward the OCD.
Uh-huh.
I'm very obsessive compulsive. I must finish the thing. Mm. I must keep going until the project is done, till the book is read.
Yeah.
I have that. Yeah, I too also like to finish things.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of interruption on the way.
Childless cat lady in Clintondale writes in, one of our regular correspondents and a real saint. I have lived in Albany, Syracuse, San Fran, Seattle, Alaska, Wyoming, Midland, Texas, New Paltz, New York over the past 60 years. Somewhere along the way, I seem to recall a radio program on NPR called Reading Aloud. And they would, for 1 hour each night, read from a popular book, the entire book over the course of however many days it took to read it. Mm-hmm. I've spent about a half an hour Googling such a program, but can't find it. Does anyone recall it?
No, I do not. I know the...
it's a great idea, though.
The one
Somebody here will.
The short stories.
Oh, yeah, selected shorts. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which I love, which is always beautifully done, but I've never heard of that one.
Reading Aloud. Well, I'll have to look into that.
What a great idea.
Okay, now, we are at the end of the show. This was fun.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed this. don't be surprised. I actually did. Barbara, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do it?
They can find me on Facebook, B.A. Chapitis.
You better spell Chapitis.
Okay. C-H-E... P as in pasta, A-I, T as in trouble, I-S as in snake.
No, I'm sorry. That's wrong. You want to try it again?
Pasta, trouble, snake.
Lolly Davidson, how do people find you?
Well, I've got a website, lollydavidson.com. I'm also on Facebook. I have two, my regular page, and then I have the author page. So I think if you search Lolly Davidson author on Facebook, you'll get my author page.
And if you want me to take over your book... It'll sound like this. Hey, you got a blue woman burning over here. You know what I mean? Get a fire truck.
Maybe for my other book, Against the Grain.
I think you should let me and Ray do it together.
That would be great.
Yes.
It'll only cost you 10 or 20 grand.
Yeah.
All right, we're done. Support comes from the Columbia Land Conservancy, managing 10 properties open to all from dawn to dusk daily. ColumbiaLand.org. And Shedman, offering sheds, garages, gazebos, horse barns for nearly 40 years, set up and delivered. Inventory at shedman.com. Thanks again to Barbara Chapitis, you heard the spelling, and Lolly Davidson for joining us today. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Susie Chekai screened the call. Susie, thanks for stopping in today. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Food Friday, and we'll talk all about eggs with Shannon Hayes of Bush Hollow Farm, a sap Bush Hollow Farm, I believe it is. I wrote the script, and I made a mistake. But Shannon Hayes will be here, and we'll talk about eggs, and we'll find out the details tomorrow. See you, too.